Hi, this is Brian from Progarchy.
Hey, how you doing, man?
Good, how are you?
Good, good, good.
Yeah, thanks so much for your time this morning. I really appreciate it. I know you're a busy man, so.
Well, you know, got a couple things going on, but that's all right. Well, I'm sure you do, too.
Well, I don't have an album coming out every month, it seems like.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Tell me about the background for your upcoming album, Sola Gracia. I've had a chance to listen to it several times, and it's fantastic.
Oh, thanks, man. Thanks. I'm glad you like it. Well, I mean, I started getting these ideas while I was on a vacation, and sort of a half vacation, half work, actually. I did some gigs down in Australia.
Okay.
And then we took a trip to New Zealand. And I was just getting a flood of ideas. One thing that was going on was I'd been talking to the guys. You know, it was really interesting. Towards the end of 2019, we were all talking about what's good. You know, what you start planning the next year, you know. And so we were talking about what we could do. And it was looking like we couldn't do Transatlantic like we had hoped.
Mm.
Meaning we couldn't do any transatlantic touring and live shows. You know, originally I wanted to have transatlantic. The logical thing would be to have transatlantic at Morse Fest. This is before COVID or any of this stuff.
Right.
But it seemed like nothing I was trying to put together, or we were trying to put together, seemed like it could happen. Like everything wasn't working. And so then I started to get this idea that, well, because I like to debut things at Morse Fest if possible, or do something, you know, do something that's in season and fresh. And I was like, well, if Transatlantic's not going to come out by then, maybe I could write a whole other thing and have it come out. You know, so I started to get the idea then, and I was getting all this inspiration and writing a lot of music, but I didn't know where it was going. And then I remembered, as I often remember, you know, the little things that people say to me, you know, I've become like the progressive rock concept album guy. You know, so if anybody has an idea for a concept album, they'll share it with me at the meet and greet, you know. And a lot of people have shared with me about doing one on Paul. So I started to consider it, and you know, started just seeing some ideas into my phone about it, and that's where it started. And then when I came home in the second half of February, and then in March, that's when I really wrote it, and it really came together. And then we tracked it in April, and now you're listening to it.
So from the start, did you envision it as just a solo album, or had you thought that maybe it could be a Neil Morse Band album?
Well, I was already thinking that it might be good to do an album like I used to.
Mm.
You know, I haven't done one or written one completely on my own in a lot of years. And so I was always thinking that might be a good idea. And I mentioned something, my wife and I were kicking it around on vacation, and she said from the other room, oh yeah, it'd be good to do another solo album. And I thought she said Sola. And then I had the idea, and I was listening to Andy Stanley's book Irresistible.
Okay.
And in my morning walks, and he talks about the five solas. And I was like, oh, there was five solas? There's sort of the battle cry of the early reformers of the Christian church in the 1500s and stuff. And so he was talking about that. So it was sort of on my mind that there was five solas. And then when I misheard her and thought she said sola, I thought, oh, I could do another sola. And maybe it could be a series.
Yeah, I mean, you could do all five of them. I mean, since you end with Paul's conversion. I mean, the next one, solo, you could do Sola Fide as faith for his missionary journeys and everything.
Totally.
But go ahead.
I wasn't expecting to spend so much time before his conversion when I started writing. It just kind of happened that way. I don't really know. You know, I kept getting ideas. Part of it was the music, I guess, that was leading me. I don't know. I mean, it just turned out that way. I didn't mean for Seemingly Sincere to become as long of a thing as it did. But, you know, you're kind of exploring, and you explore the music and then the feeling, and then you think, well, what thought would this be about? And you start writing the lyrics, you know. And it's like a album begins to take on a life of its own.
Well, that track in particular, I mean, the stoning of Stephen from at that time point, Saul's perspective, and it's a pretty powerful song, but it's kind of dark in a way, not musically, but, you know, thematically.
Yeah.
It's very dark. It's about murdering someone. And
yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I like the drama of that. You know, I think I like music that's dramatic.
Yeah.
And when I had that idea, sorry, I'm sitting out on my porch and we have this little wind chime thing. Maybe let me put that up. I think it might be a little distracting.
That's fine.
I think I can. There's a way for me to hook this thing so it doesn't ring as much. Let's see if that'll do it. It's a really nice wind chime, but yeah, it's gonna stop, I think. But it's a little windy out here.
Yeah.
Oh, anyway, yeah, I like the drama of that, and I wanted to talk about, you know, explore my thoughts about how Paul felt. That I feel, you know, in that in one place it says that it's, you know, in one translation anyway, it says that Jesus says to Paul, it's hard for you to kick against the pricks or to kick against the jabbing. I feel like the Lord was dealing with Paul's heart for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so that was really an interesting thing for me to write about. And I figured that part of what must have been touching his heart was Stephen's sincerity.
Yeah.
But then thinking about how wrong Stephen must have been, he must have thought, well, he seems sincere, but he's obviously a heretic and wrong, so we got to kill him.
Well, I don't know how you couldn't be touched by that, as you're, you know, most people, if they didn't fully believe it, you know, if it wasn't real, they wouldn't go through with, you know, they would have denied Jesus at some point, and like, he was sincere, because it is real.
Yeah,
I'm a believer myself. So your music is, you know, profoundly impacts me, and the sincerity of your lyrics, I mean, it comes through in every song that you do. But this album is, you know, it's pretty. It is very dramatic. There's the both musically and lyrically. And
yeah. Thank you, man. Thank you.
Speaking of the music, do you write that first? Do you have the idea and then go to writing the music? Do you go and write the lyrics first, or both at the same time? How does that work?
Sometimes it's at the same time. A lot of times it's, with this album, it's very lyrically driven. Mm-hmm. So I didn't want to leave very much written before I moved on. So I wrote a lot of the lyrics as I was writing it. For other albums where it's more musically oriented and the lyrics are, you know, certainly second place, I'll leave a lot of the lyrics till later. But I'm not on this one so much. But still, I don't get all the lyrics right at once. I might do a draft of... In fact, there was a short little draft of what became Ballyhoo. From that vacation. Yeah. And it was just like, we are the fortunate people, the apple of Jehovah's eye. Da 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 da. You know, it's like you get little pieces of the puzzle and then you fill in the rest later.
Yeah. So it just kind of comes song by song in that regard then.
Yeah, and then you come to the end of it and think, well, where should we go here? What should happen? And it's, when you're, you know, when you're really working on it, when you really get down to it, and you start working on the transitions and whatnot, you know, again, you're just throwing things out, and sometimes you come back the next day and go, no, it's too busy. One thing I tried to have on this album was space. I listen to some of my albums later and go, it needs more space. Like, more time when not so much is going on. More time when there's less instruments playing. You know? A lot of my favorite records, I'll listen and go, you know, there's only four instruments playing right here, or only three. You know? I tend to put in a lot of stuff. And so it's something I'm trying to correct. Like, for example, at the end of Ballyhoo, that's why it breaks down to just drums and bass for a little while. There's a, you know, it's kind of like, let's let people absorb what they've heard before we go, you know, into some other thing, you know, that they have to think about.
Well, that's actually kind of a cool thing about this album, is I know there's long instrumental passages, as, you know, all your albums have, but it's not like it's overpowering in its instrumentality in the way that, you know, so a lot of albums in progressive rock can be. It's almost a little simpler, but it's still incredibly complex, and there's a lot of symphonic overtones you can hear, and then you have, you know, the like the choral passages and everything, which is cool. So when the people that, you know, that play on your album and all that, when do you bring them into the mix when you're in the process?
Well, it depends on the team.
Yeah.
With Flying Colors, for example, I won't write anything in its entirety at all.
Okay.
Because it tends to hinder its possibilities. It's better with that team to come in with very little and explore the stuff together. Transatlantic's sort of in between. You know, I'll flesh out some stuff quite a bit with them and present it. But you know, you always got to be subject to a lot of change. I mean, when you're working on in teams like that. And what was different about Solo Gratia was that, you know, I wrote the whole thing. This is the first album since Testimony that has been recorded exactly as I originally wrote it.
Okay.
Everything else has been like reshaped or reimagined or cut and pasted or some, in some way.
So tell me a little bit about like who all you work with on the album. I know obviously Mike Portnoy, because he's on just about everything, but you know, who else all worked on it, and you know, how was it? I imagine it was a bit different because of the virus and everything that's going on in the world. The way that you recorded it, I imagine, was different.
Oh, yeah, totally. I've never done an album like this. Ever. I mean, even with Testimony, Mike came here. Mike and I have never done an album remotely. It's the first one.
Wow.
Randy either, I don't think. So, yeah, that was totally different. And you asked me, when do I give them the album? Well, I gave them the album after I thought I had it pretty much, you know, arranged and done. And so I sent it to Mike first in April. And then when he was done with the drums, I sent it to Randy. And then I sent it to Rich. And in the interim, I was sending bits to Eric and Bill, and the string players actually came here. They were local.
Okay.
And so we did actually record them here, and the background singers came here also. But it was kind of in that order.
You know, that's cool that you used actual, you know, string players, and I mean, I wasn't quite sure if it was, you know, if it was synths or if it was real players. That's pretty cool.
Oh yeah, gotta have real strings.
But you know, that probably adds a big complexity to things too, and arranging all that, and you know, and writing that, and Do you work with anyone to write specifically for string players, or do you do that all yourself?
I used to do it all myself. Now I job that out. But what I did on this album was I pretty much just had them play what I had played on the synth strings.
Okay.
So I sent the files and the MIDI files to Gideon Klein, who then, you know, put the... I think it was just him and his girlfriend, Jose, and they came and did it all. His brother, Gabe, engineered those sessions. And it was really nice because I just got to kind of sit back and listen to them kill it.
Yeah.
They were great. And another guy that I love to use is Chris Carmichael, who I've used for a lot of years. And he's particularly amazing if you wanted to send him a song and say, hey, do an arrangement. I mean, he did some arrangements on the Life and Times album.
Mm.
Like on the song Joanna and Good Love Is on the Way. They're just great. So yeah, Chris Carmichael's awesome too.
When did the connections with Sola Scriptura emerge in the writing process? And was it pretty early on that you had the idea to kind of weave those both lyrical and musical themes in a little bit?
I did right from the beginning, because it was another solo, right?
Right.
So right from the beginning, in fact, the original overture had a bunch of Sola Scriptura themes in the overture, but I wound up feeling like it was too long. And, I had one of the things in, so, like, is the drum solo. I had the drum solo section, like, from Sola in the overture. And then also when they're wound up being the drum solo in Seemingly Sincere, I thought that was overkill.
Mm.
No. I mean, it's quite rare to have one drum solo on an album, let alone two, you know. So, yeah, I had those ideas right from the beginning, and I put them in wherever I could, wherever I thought was good.
Is it difficult to... I mean, that was, what, 2007? Sola Scriptura? That's a long... fairly long time ago now. Was it difficult to kind of reach back that far and to work stuff into this, or
thank God for Waterfalls. My music streaming app has everything on it, right? So if I want to, like, how does that theme in Sola go? What's that? You know, I just like go into Waterfall and everything's right there on my phone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So is it kind of just doing it by ear type of thing for the music, or?
Yeah, but sometimes I had to like refresh my memory because I have, you know, listened to Sola Scriptura quite a while, and so yeah, it was fun though. I mean, I knew I didn't want to do it too much, just what we call a sprinkling.
Well, and it works well because it's not overpowering at all, but it's just like, wait, I've heard this before. You know, it makes you stop and think.
Yeah.
And the way you...
to have it referenced. I really enjoyed, I don't know if people will catch it, I suppose they will. I really enjoyed putting some of the Sola songs in that kind of round that happens in the Now I Can See section. You know, how the Now I Can See is going on, and then I add the chorus vocal, and then I add Heaven in My Heart.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And I was like, oh, yeah, well, sorry. And then the end, she's closed with the sun. And yeah, I thought that was neat to bring it all together like that.
That is cool. Well, and then to bring, like, the... Well, it's a similar... The themes are similar, because, yeah, it's interesting. They're almost opposites in the sense... With Martin Luther is on the receiving end of that kind of persecution, and here Paul is the other side of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's as Paul is the aggressor, or I guess Saul is the aggressor here.
Yeah, but then see what happens now. What's going to happen next is then Paul becomes the outcast and the one that's oppressed.
Right.
He becomes the subject of persecution. You know, he gets flogged and thrown out and jailed and
right,
so
exactly.
He's about to experience. You know, some of this persecution that, he's been dishing out. So that's really, that's going to be interesting. That's got to be the next part, you know.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think
part two.
It definitely has to lend itself to a part two. I mean, it...
But I suppose what I'm trying to say is the spirit is all is the same.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the spirit of one who basically, you know, gives all to God and for God and then lives from that place is the same no matter what the circumstances.
Yeah. Oh, and even before his conversion, you know, Saul, you know, Paul was convinced that that's what he was doing. And, you know, it takes, you know, the light on the road to, you know, it takes Jesus appearing to him on the road to Damascus to say, hey, why are you persecuting me? Pretty powerful
and
stuff.
Thank God that he listened and he did it. Where would the rest of us be?
Right? Exactly. I mean, he goes off and founds, you know, all these churches throughout the Mediterranean that are, you know.
When the others wouldn't go.
Right.
Jesus says, go to the end of the ends of the earth. And they basically can't tear themselves away from Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
So God needs somebody else to do it.
Well, it's interesting. He needed a Paul because Paul was a very, you know, fierce person. And you see that in his epistles. And, you know, a lot of these churches, they would have these problems. And he would go to them and be like, hey, you need to get your act together. And he needed that kind of really strong personality that you didn't see as much with the disciples.
Yeah, and there he is, caught between two sides.
Right.
You know, he's got the Judaizers to deal with, and then he's got the crazy Gentiles to deal with.
Right.
So he's kind of trying to bring them all to get together as one.
Exactly.
And what a challenge.
Yeah. So you got what, Morse Fest coming up? There's a Live Flying Colors album coming out. When is that coming out?
You know, I don't have the release date at the tip of my
fingers
here. I think it's like, it might be the first day of Morse Fest. It might be September 18th.
Oh, okay, so that's coming up pretty soon too.
But they're both in September. I know that.
And then
Philadelphia and Flying Colors Live.
And then you guys. You recorded for, or at least started recording for a Transatlantic album this year, right?
We actually started recording it last year.
Oh, was it last year? Everything's running together for me.
Yeah, no, I don't blame you. It can for me too. Yeah, that's really coming to a head now. We're honing in on like the closing things. Like, I haven't heard any mixes yet, but I think I will very soon.
Okay.
And then there, you know, artwork and all that stuff. So we're getting closer to the finish line on that thing, and you'll have that to look forward to.
Is that probably going to be next year sometime?
I think so.
Yeah.
It should be there. Hopefully it'll be the early part of next year.
Do those albums tend to take a little longer to come together? Like this album seems like it came together pretty quickly, but, you know, part of that is if it's just you leading the charge on it as opposed to working with people literally all over the world.
Yeah. Well, there's that. I mean, that's a big factor when you can just act and you just go. But COVID was a big factor.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Cruise to the Edge was canceled. Other things were canceled. You know, there wasn't, we can, you know, and then there was a period of time where my wife and I had been exposed, like someone around us, I can't remember who now, but someone around us had tested positive.
Mm.
So we had to quarantine for 2 weeks, even though we tested negative, but still, you know. So there was nothing to do, so I was just like, bam, 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 working, you know, 10 hours a day or whatever on this record, and so in that way you can really finish things quickly.
Was that refreshing in a way to, I mean, the circumstances are obviously terrible, but was it kind of refreshing to get a chance to focus without as many distractions?
It was definitely a silver lining, you know, thing. It was definitely, you know, some lemonade from the lemons.
Yeah.
And it was nice. It was a double-edged sword to make all the decisions.
Mm.
It was nice to not have to you know, run it by people, and then, you know, have so, you know, to, there's a certain amount in every team of disagreement about what to do and where to go, and that's, you know, so I didn't have to deal with any of that. But also I had to deal with the kind of relatively unfamiliar territory of making all the decisions by myself. I mean, totally by myself, like no engineer, nothing. Right, I was completely alone, and so it was challenging, but you know, I believe that I had someone helping me.
Oh, definitely.
So that was the great comfort. I kept saying to the Lord, like, Lord, you're the producer, what do you want to do?
Yeah,
you know. And I felt like he definitely gave me some guidance.
Well, it's funny. I was doing an interview a couple weeks ago, and I was asking him about his writing process, and he's like, well, I don't know how Neil Morse does it. He seems to be able to write a song a minute, and I'm like, thinking to myself, I know how he does it.
Right.
It's definitely a gift from God.
Amen. Amen. He's the giver. Absolutely.
I had read in, like, a, I don't know, it was like a press release or something that they had sent me, that you had, you know, you had passed this stuff on, I think, to Mike and to Randy, to get, like, their input, and they didn't want to make any changes. So had you been expecting them to, like, want to change things around a little bit, and then was that a bit of a surprise when they were just like, oh, let's do it as is?
It made me a little nervous.
Why is that?
Yeah, I thought, are they being lazy, or do they really mean it? Well, because I know that, you know, a lot of the albums have really benefited from their input. Mm-hmm. So I thought, well, hey, well, we're doing this remotely, but we can still do a Zoom call and kick around ideas if we want to move some things around or cut and paste things, or if there's a section that isn't, you know, sparkling, you know, we can cut it. Or, but yeah, that's what they said. So that's what we did.
Yeah. Yeah, whatever works, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, is there anything we haven't covered about the album? Anything you want people to know?
There's a version where I played drums on the whole album.
Oh, wow. Well, isn't there one of the songs on the album that you played, that's on the final version of the album, that you played drums on?
Yeah, I kept the drums that I did on Building a Wall.
Building a Wall, that's right.
Mainly because I liked how, you know, I play very simply, generally, because that's all I can do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I liked the super simple approach that I was doing. And I actually called Mike afterwards and told him, you know, I wasn't really entirely digging that, you know. And I asked him if he wanted to redo it simpler, and he said, nah, just use yours. You know, so which was fine with me. So that worked out good. You know, but I wanted to see. I did give him an opportunity, but I think he was moved on to other things, and you know, didn't really want to go back to that. So yeah, there's. I don't like to program drums anymore, and I have a drum kit that's all mic'd up in my studio. So, okay. It took me like 3 days or something, because I'm really not. I'm not very good of a drummer, and that was interesting. But I wound up feeling like maybe I was spending too much time. You know, you want to use your time wisely. But
yeah.
Anyway, so be it. That's how it was. What else do I want you to know about it? There was a whole other. There was a where Never Change and Seemingly Sincere are. There were two originally. There was two different songs in there.
Okay,
and I wound up cutting them because I just felt, I remember feeling like it needed to get moodier. And that's when I went into Never Change and Seemingly Sincere, because sometimes the album needed, again, I was looking for space, you know, like the beginning of Never Change has all that space, you know, it just goes down to the one guitar going ding, 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 and so that was part of it. And then I put all that space in before Seemingly Sincere too. There was just a bunch of space there that winds up having all the kind of noises and then the arpeggiated synth sort of fades in. And it all sounds very natural now, mm-hmm. but at the time, that's what I was looking for. I was looking for mood and space.
Well, the result is quite stunning. So it's a great album, and I know once it's released, people are going to love it. So.
Well, thank you so much, man. Yeah, well, it's on Waterfall, and it'll be out September 11th everywhere else. So
yeah,
there you go.
That's great. Well, thanks so much for your time. I know you're busy, so I'll let you carry on with your day, but I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with me.
You too, man. Thanks for the interview.
All right. Have a good one.
You too. God bless you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.